Do you plan to do a larger map?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. It's an easy one, isn't it?
As an easy one?
I mean, it's an easy decision to make. It's like, I've got a map for Seattle, now just expand it to the state.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really interesting because several people have said that to me. Are you going to do a map of the state?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is really interesting because when I started with the Poetic Grid and I would explain to people what it is I wanted to do, most of the time I would get a nod.
Blank stares?
Yeah. But I wouldn't get like a, oh, yeah, that, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that that's there and you see the complication there, you know, where I'm trying to get at with the map, now people are like, why are you going to do one for the state? And I think, yes, I'm going to try to make one for the state. But I love it that now there's a an awareness about the way in which place shapes who we are. I mean, people who live in South Park are shaped by those streets and the lack of investment there and the poverty and the lack of services, just as much as people who live, you know, in Capitol Hill are shaped by their space. You know what I mean?
Do I know what you mean? I mean, I moved from Columbia City to Rainier Beach. We couldn't afford Columbia City.
Yeah.
And we have this opportunity in Rainier Beach that was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And the building that we were in, even though we were in as a multifamily tax exemption,
yeah,
so we were paying a lower rent based on our incomes,
yeah,
the building we were in had a lot of people who were affluent, and there often is this kind of bourgeois sense of entitlement,
yeah,
that did not sit well with us, let's put it that
yeah
way. So
yeah,
to get out of that to us is in many ways refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Although we still go and shop there, and there are better restaurants in Columbia City than Rainier Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we spend a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we are come now as visitors, even though it still feels, we feel comfortable there because we spent so many years there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Well, I mean, I go to Columbia City because I feel comfortable there myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a different subset of the population is definitely, for me, more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, I cross the bridge and I go, it's just on the south end, so it's not that far. But if I go shopping, I go there.
Well, the PCC in West Seattle is closed.
And it's closed. Yeah, I don't know. I don't go to the PCC anymore.
Well,
yeah.
We see the other, one of the other poets, laureate, Elizabeth Austin, who now is shopping in Columbia
yeah
City. So we
yeah
see her in the dairy.
Well, I saw you for New Year's because we were at Seward Park and we went for grapes and other things there. But yeah, it's harder to get over there.
Yeah. How does all this public poetry life and duties and appointments and responsibilities affect your writing time?
Yeah, I don't have any. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That's it.
It does. You know, I've been working on this book for so long, and at the end of my term, I got asked several times by folks to serve on boards, which I would love to do, because I think it's really important to be at the table. It counts
mm-hmm
to be at the table.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to work on my writing, and so I declined, and now I find myself with very little time to do it. I'm struggling with that. Big time.
Yeah. For two more years.
Yeah, for two more years. I'm hoping. I saw Todd on Monday. I was in Yakima. I would spend the day in Yakima. And Todd was there. And he said that what he started doing was that when he was leading a workshop, he would sit and write. Because that was the time he had. And so he read a poem that he said, I wrote this at a workshop I did, and I gave a prompt, and I sat down and I started writing myself. And this is a work in progress, but this is what came out. And I thought, I think I'm going to have to do that. Yeah.
What was the inspiration for Killing Marias, a poem for multiple voices? I mean, we know what the inspiration was. It's the femicide in Juarez and that part of Mexico. But when did you decide, I have to write about this?
That book took me 7 years. I started it a long time ago. And, you know, I started and put it away and went back to it. And for a while I worked, you know, I workshopped it. I mean, I went to a week-long workshop writing retreat thing with people from all over the country, and I brought the manuscript for that because I was really interested in feedback. And then I put it in a drawer, but it would always come back. It was like, I almost felt like the women were saying, don't forget us. You have to, you know, you have to finish this. But I started it because I was, the femicide floated in my subconscious, sort of floating back there. I knew about it. I didn't know very much about it. But I sat down to write about women's bodies. And somehow I went from that to the women of Juarez, because these are dead bodies of women. And I think that's where the connection was made. And I started then investigating the murders. And the first draft of the book was really, well, somewhere along the line, reading the lists of the women killed, the hundreds of women killed, I noticed that a lot of them had, their names started with Maria. And I thought this would be very interesting to write then, to take them and write into that idea of Maria, the Virgin Mary, and splice their, you know, their experience onto that. And so the first drafts of the book had very, many of the poems were really about the way the women were murdered. And it became a very hard read, even for myself. It was really hard to write about it and to then read it back.
But isn't that what we want from poetry, the kind of experience that it includes, involves, contains the duende?
Yes, it's true. But I also started thinking about the work as moving beyond the femicide into a bigger realm of not only on the border, which this it starts there, right, at the border with these women's bodies, mm-hmm. but then moving beyond to consider issues of transnational capital and how we living here in the U.S. are complicit in the exploitation of these women. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the readers to think about that. Mm-hmm. So there are some poems that point in that direction.
What's an example of one of those poems? Would you want to read one of those? Yeah. Because I marked some poems to read, and I'd love for you to read one or two of the ones that I marked. But if you could read specifically to illustrate your point, that'd be great.
Yeah, I could tell you. I mean, there's one that makes an explicit... So this one, for instance, Maria de los Angeles.
Which I pulled out for you too.
Oh, you did. Okay. And then there's another one. So the Maria Stella, Cause of Our Joy.
Both of those are marked.
So, yeah, okay. That's another one. There's another one. Not that one. Yeah, so this Maria Isabel, Boulder of Strength. Is another one where I'm trying to point in the direction of our involvement.
Complicity.
Yeah. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay. Maria Isabel, Boulder of Strength. There is no limit. Some kill, some bank, some drink, some buy, some watch. Some stand by the playing hand, the poaching game that killed her. Beloveds, see wholly her figure. Behind the hours, justice awaits. So this idea of poaching somebody for their work, which is really their life, you know, when these maquilas where these women work are not safe or good places to work.
Right.
And that comes at the expense of their own lives because they're not with their families and with their children. And just how we, it's really a poaching game of poor people elsewhere.
Yeah. Please read the first poem in the book.
Oh, the first poem? Which one's that? Oh, here?
Mm-hmm.
Maria?
Yeah.
Maria, somos todas una. Protégenos, madrecita. We are all one. In your image made, hermanas linked, backstitched to the edge of your brilliant robe. Like you, we have aureolas smooth and nipples hard. Like you, we have a nested swallow cave and a life-giving cut. All about you is harmonious and divine. Nacre of the deepest ocean, star of purple skies, your divinity surges. inside each of us. Yeah. I'll show you downstairs. I have, I'm a big fan of the Virgen de Guadalupe. So this poem is essentially an honoring of the Virgen de Guadalupe.
I think of my little girl when I when I hear the poem.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You use the word cut in there, mm-hmm. which is a very interesting... It's evocative of a very similar word that's like that. It's,
yeah.
it's a very artful use of language there.
Mm.
Do you remember how that came to you, to use that?
Well, here's a Kleenex, Paul. Paul, you're a poet like me. So often I read something and I'm moved to tears by it, and I think, am I the only person who does that? It happens to me all the time. Well, like I said, part of what I was trying to do was to really speak about our bodies in a way in which we own it. Because there's another poem in the book where I speak about the dismemberment. I mean, a lot of the murdered women were dismembered.
I know.
And the dismemberment that happens in the media with women's faces or arms of shave your legs this way. I mean, it's not even the whole person.
Yeah.
It's just a part of a body.
Like cuts of meat.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm drawing a parallel there along the book, but I think here really it was just, and there are parts in the book where I insist on a very straightforward way of talking about our bodies that is loving and at the same time grounded. So if I say this, you're not going to move me from here. You know what I mean? It's a word as a tree kind of thing.
Staking claim.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said that women said you have to finish this. And, you know, when we think about the muse and we think about entities outside ourselves or energies or resonances that we as poets attempt to tap into and how we use metaphors to describe that. And then we were also talking before the interview started about Tenzing Momo. I was telling you about the herbal apothecary and going to look at Witch's Almanac. There is a feeling of a cult which comes, a feeling of something metaphysical when I think of you saying that women said you have to finish this, you know. And you're from El Salvador and there's a culture there that is more forgiving with understandings of being able to tap into and have an experience of that you described in such a way that maybe north of I-90 they wouldn't understand as much. Can you speak to that?
Well, the book is grounded in that. The book is really, it's really a splicing. I think of it as a splicing of flesh and spirit. And that's partly why the titles of the book are a splicing of the real names, the real first names. But instead of a last name, I'm using lines from a prayer. And in some occasions, I've changed them to a more poetic expression. But it's really bordering on both. It's bordering on prayer and it's bordering on writing. And the wellspring of it really is, I don't know. It's not a rational place.
Seance.
Yeah.
Evocative of that kind of vibe.
Yeah. And of, you know, of when I was a little girl, my aunt used to pray the rosary. I don't remember how often she did it, but she had a heart of Jesus in her room and she would invite us to pray. And also for anniversaries of death and things like this, we prayed. And we have a large family, so there'd be lots of people, right? For my grandfather's, you know, when the rosary would be prayed. And it would be a woman who led it, and it would be call and response. And if you know the rosary, depending on the day, you're reading different mysteries, they're called.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the day, you're reading Tuesdays and Thursdays are the glorious mysteries, whatever, I can't remember them. But these women had memorized the mystery, so nobody was reading it. Most people read it because there's order prayers, you know. But they had memorized it, and it was a trance or a seance where the woman would call out the prayer, and then there would be a collective response, and it just went on and on and on until it was done. And then there was a catharsis, there was a release. And in that circle, when you enter the circle of this prayer, there was a suspension of everything. People went everywhere. People went into their memories. People went into, you know, just feeling this, having these emotions of being close to a sacred something. And I conceived of the book starts with two prayers at the beginning. I think of them as prayers or incantations. Mm-hmm. The poem I just read, and then at the end, there's another poem. So you enter with this opening, and then you read the names of the woman, and then at the end, there's another incantation that allows you to leave from that space. So it's very much writing on these ideas of how do you call the sacred into a space? How do you create a space of beauty and memory and remembrance, you know, in this case through words and their bodies?
And then how do you close that space so the antepasados can go back and do what they need to do because they have other duties besides being here and attending to our needs?
Yes, and it was very important for me that the ending poem is very hopeful.
I think maybe you should read it.
Yeah, I'll read the closing poem because it's the twin to the one I just read. Let's see. Where is that? And it's titled also Maria. Both of them are just titled Maria. Maria, may the flower of your birth open up each day, receive into its depth sun's honey rays, and at night gently may it fold its petals in sacred mystery. May it release its perfume in sorrow as in joy. May its essence bloom for long. Let us all remember on this and every day, however compelling, words are not flesh. Figurative language, life does not replace.
Ashe. The publisher of this book, To Sylvia's Press, how did it end up being published by this Washington State publisher?
Yeah, well, I brought it to them because the book has a very particular sensibility, you know? And I brought it and I said, would you be interested in publishing this? By then, 2 years earlier, I had the cover. An artist here in Seattle had drawn the cover for me. This is an etching, actually. It's not a picture. It's a wood etching. And I had talked to a friend, another woman. I had seen her at a conference in BC. And I had said, you know, I really want to publish. She was at the conference a few years earlier where I had brought the manuscript. And I really wanted to be able to somehow give something back to the people in Juarez who are still dealing with the loss of their loved moms and daughters, right? And so it was clear for me that if the book ever came to be printed, it needed to have a return to Mexico and to Juarez. And so I wanted to self-publish the book at one point and do that. And clearly, whatever money that would come from the sale of the book, take it back as a gesture of remembrance and honoring and solidarity too. And this friend of mine said, don't do that. Do not do that. You can't do that. And her family, she's Arab American, and she just grilled me and lectured me that I should not do this. And I walked away and I thought, okay, you know, and then I didn't do anything about it until I've had these moments where the book would come back to me and it would ask me to do something, you know, like you have to do something. And so I thought, okay, then let me think of some publishers. And I thought that that it might find a home at To Sylvia. So I brought it. I brought them the manuscript and they were immediately said, yes, we will publish it. And so I think the whole endeavor from the conception to the you know, the preface of the book is great. Gabriela Gutierrez y Muz did a wonderful job with that essay. She offered to do that. I never asked her. She said, do you need a preface? Let me write one. And she wrote that essay. And so the whole spirit around the book is one of really some sort of stepping beyond yourself. And I think the women at To Sylvia Press did that too. And so it's, yeah, it has, I'd like to think of it as having this really good energy. And I've been in touch with people in Juarez and want to go down there. Maybe at the end of this year.
I'm grateful for our time together and for being able to talk to you about these things.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the chance.